Greetings, this is Robert Noya, Editor-in-Chief of Sky and Telescope Magazine. I'm on the phone with radio astronomer Joseph Lazio of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. Joe authored the cover story of our January 2012 issue about how astronomers on distant planets could detect Earth and how our civilization could help them do that if we choose to do so. Joe, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure to be here.
Obviously, there needs to be alien astronomers in the first place for extraterrestrials to be able to detect Earth. What is your thinking about the prevalence of technological civilizations in our galaxy? For example, do you think there could be any within 100 light years of Earth?
From a scientific standpoint, of course, we don't know of any other life in the universe other than what's on our planet. I always did like Carl Sagan's little phrase in Contact, though, of it would be an incredible waste of space if we were the only ones, though. And I think there's at least some cause for optimism when you start looking at the results from recent planet hunting searches. The number of planets that have been discovered in the past 10 years or so is astonishing, and it's to the point where when I started graduate school, there were still debates about whether there are planets or not. And you know, I wasn't in graduate school that long ago. To now, where entire conferences held on just the topic of exoplanets. Now, I have some reason for optimism, but I would stress, again, that scientifically we know no evidence of life other than on this planet.
And you describe how alien astronomers could detect Earth and the fact that Earth is a life-bearing planet by detecting certain compounds and elements in our planet's atmosphere. How soon will we have the capability to detect life-bearing planets around relatively nearby stars?
That question, of course, has many nuances. If we are, of course, getting very close to the point of detecting perhaps Earth-mass planets. And this is one of those important distinctions to always keep in mind, and sometimes even we astronomers get a bit sloppy in it. But Venus, in some sense, is an Earth-like planet. It's almost the same mass. It's got an atmosphere. So in many respects, Venus is kind of like Earth, but in many important respects, from our own habitation of a planet, Venus is quite different. So finding an Earth-like planet, you know, I'm not that good at gambling, but I think we could probably have the technology in the next 20 to 30 years to be able to point at stars in the sky, say, there's probably an Earth-like planet around that kind of star.
And I guess, you know, determining whether it has life or not, that might be kind of difficult from afar, but I also know that astronomers and planetary scientists have done a lot of work modeling what biosignatures might look like from maybe, you know, several dozen light years away.
Yes, and I think this is touched on briefly in the article of depending upon what compounds are in a planet's atmosphere, you can make arguments about whether it's likely or not that the planet has life. But as part of the question you asked about seeing or determining life from afar, and that's a very important aspect. Some of the listeners may have heard in the past of the discovery of methane in the atmosphere of Mars, and there remains some uncertainty as to whether that methane is produced deep underground by bacteria or is it produced so-called abiologically by processes that don't involve cells but just involve natural chemical reactions. The jury is still out, and that's just with a planet that's relatively next door to us. Making a definitive detection of life on a distant planet, short of some kind of technological indication, for instance, light on the night side of a planet or some really clear-cut indication that there's technology, just finding compounds in the atmosphere of a planet, it might be really difficult to say to 99.99% confidence that that is really the result of life.
And going now to intelligent life, you describe in the article a variety of methods that we could use to signal extraterrestrial beings, from radio waves to particle beams to nuclear blasts in outer space. After going through each possibility one by one, it seems to me that radio is still the best way to go, given our current level of technological and economic development, despite the inherent limitations that you discuss in the sidebar. Would you agree that right now, if we want to signal extraterrestrials, the best way for us to do it is sending out radio waves?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just they're, by all measures, they're relatively cheap to produce, and there are less concerns about how they are affected by their propagation or travel into the galaxy. And at some level, as is explained in the article, with technology like we have today, in fact, technology that we've had for perhaps the past 20 or 30 years, it's possible that a nearby civilization already knows we exist. And from that standpoint, it certainly seems that the cheapest, most effective way, if we want to try to signal others, would be to use radio waves.
And then, of course, that brings up the entire question about should we, given how alien invasion movies and TV shows and books, etc., have pervaded our culture, I would think that a lot of people would be adamantly opposed to the idea of making specific attempts to contact aliens, even though, as you just hinted, we're sort of doing it unintentionally. We addressed this issue briefly in a short sidebar on the final page of the article, but I would be interested to hear more details about your thinking on this very interesting question.
I think those are not particularly new concepts or fears. I suspect that if we went back and looked a little bit at even literature from antiquity, that there have always been concerns about others, and whether those others are the Spartans or the Thracians or Martians, there's always been a concern or a fear of other people and all, us versus them. And to some extent, that may be a very well-motivated fear from our evolution. As far as contacting other civilizations, it's a bit more difficult to understand analogies from human history here. I mean, many people, for instance, point to the Europeans reaching the New World. But, of course, one of the major disadvantages that the Native Americans had was they didn't have the immunity to diseases that many of the Europeans carried. And many of the Native Americans died as a result of disease, even if the Europeans had been saints. And there were some very concerned Europeans. There were a large number of Native Americans who probably would have died from influenza and a host of other diseases to which they didn't have immunity. Whereas in this case, we're not actually talking about contact in the physical sense with ET. We're talking more about exchanging messages. It's a bit more difficult, I think, to draw analogies from human history. And for that reason, I'm a little bit less concerned of the potential consequences. Of course, there's always the possibility that we would learn something that we aren't technologically prepared to handle, but you could argue we're doing well enough with nuclear weapons and other kinds of technology development that we do well enough already in having problems with that, so having contact with others would not particularly add any more risk.
Right, and do you think that extremely advanced civilizations will develop interstellar travel, making it possible for them to travel from one star to another?
That's an interesting question. There's certainly no laws of physics that would prohibit interstellar travel. I think when people have tried, and people really have tried to do serious engineering designs of what would it take to produce an interstellar spacecraft, it's a really tough job. Interstellar space is very hazardous to at least to life as we know it from the standpoint of radiation and particle exposure. It's even tough, the listeners are probably aware, there have been talks about going back to the moon or going to asteroids or going to Mars. And even getting outside of the Earth's magnetosphere starts to become a bit risky at our current level of technology. I would say that there's certainly, again, there are no laws of physics that prohibit it, but it's a really tough engineering job. We should not underestimate how difficult it is. And I think it could require a very advanced civilization that really is willing to devote a lot of resources to this kind of problem in order to really start thinking about interstellar travel. And it may very well be, of course, that it isn't until civilizations face something very serious, for instance, their sun starting to heat up to the point that it's boiling off their oceans, that they really have to take this possibility seriously.